From West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beth Voorhees. Governor Tomlin is holding a briefing to provide citizens with the latest on the water emergency. For a fourth day, residents in nine counties have been unable to drink or use tap water since a chemical leak on Thursday contaminated the Elk River in Charleston. The governor is at the podium. We'll take you live to the state capitol.
Cabell, Clay, Jackson, Kanawha, Lincoln, Putnam, and Roane counties, the numbers we're seeing are trending in the right direction. Our team has been hard at work for the past couple of days. The Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, our emergency management offices, the Department of Health and Human Resources, our county health departments, our West Virginia National Guard, our West Virginia State Police, the Department of Environmental Protection, the Department of Highways, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Education, and our private sector donors, such as Broughton, CVS Pharmacies, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Kroger, Walmart, just to name a few. Other numerous volunteer agencies have also contributed in many ways, and many West Virginians across our state have also. They've reached out to help one another throughout the past 3 days. Our team has been diligent in testing samples from throughout the affected area. The numbers look good, and like last night, they are very encouraging. I believe that we're at a point where we could say that we see light at the end of the tunnel. I ask all West Virginians to continue to be patient as we work to safely restore service to the affected areas. We've made a lot of progress in the past 3 days. At this time, I'd like to introduce members of our team to update you on our efforts and our progress. And I'd also like to say to those at home that it's very important to listen to what's being said here tonight and follow the protocols as we work to get back to normal. First person I'd like to introduce is our Adjutant General, General Hoyer. General.
Thank you, Governor. Over the past 24 hours, sampling and testing has provided confirmation that for a 24-hour period that we have at the water treatment facility a consistent number of below one part per million, both at the outflow of the water treatment facility. The interagency team has agreed that this allows us to move forward to the next phase of sampling and testing throughout the system to provide the appropriate confirmation regarding the integrity of the system. In a moment, I'll introduce Lieutenant Colonel Grant, who will go over the specifics of the numbers and our ongoing sampling process, which is running throughout the day, 24 hours throughout the day. He will also provide you an overview of the numbers that we have today. In just a few moments, then Jeff McIntyre will explain the significance of those test evaluation numbers that we have confirmed today and how that impacts the potential restart or the restart of the system. No order will be given to lift or change what is currently in place until the interagency team has confirmed throughout the system that we are at the appropriate levels and the Department of Health, Public Health, has signed off on the final numbers for the evaluation. At this time too, before I bring Colonel Grant up, Governor Tomlin and I would like to specifically thank National Guard personnel from the District of Columbia, Ohio, and Tennessee, and Pennsylvania who have come in to support this technical effort. At this time, Lieutenant Colonel Grant will cover the numbers for you.
Thank you, General. As been mentioned, the numbers overnight have trended in the direction that we expected them to. The numbers at 0600, 6 a.m. this morning were 0 parts per million in and 0 parts per million out. The same numbers were recorded at 0700, 7 a.m. this morning as well. So that is very encouraging and allows us to move forward with the plan that Mr. McIntyre will explain. Over the past 24 hours, we've collected hundreds of samples using 16 joint sample teams with the employees of the West Virginia American Water Company, National Guardsmen, civil support team members. We've collected samples outside of the water plant as well from fire hydrants in various zones, and the numbers on the fire hydrants are also very encouraging. Yesterday evening, we had one number that was 1.39 parts per million. However, we went back and retested that fire hydrant, and it was below the below the threshold that we needed to be at, 0.7 part per million. So the remaining fire hydrants that we have tested all were also as well below the threshold. So very encouraging numbers. These samples are all being sent to 10 labs around the state, and also we've flown samples to Ohio, and we've also flown samples to Pittsburgh, and those labs are assisting us as well. Continuous operations are going to go on as long as necessary to ensure that we get all the samples throughout the zones and the districts taken care of. So I'll be followed by Mr. McIntyre to explain some of the process moving forward from here. Thank you.
Thank you and good evening. I'm Jeff McIntyre. I'm the president of West Virginia American Water. Before I start talking about the system, I want to thank the governor for the interagency partners. They've been we've worked together very well, and it has certainly expedited the timelines that we have had in this recovery process. Our procedure for lifting the do not use order is to do it by zone. And when I talk about zones, we're talking about the different pressure zones we've talked about many times. There's many of them, and there's complicated. We need to get samples at different points within the zones to verify that the water that we're putting out of the treatment plant is completely through that zone, and then we'll be able to lift that order for those zones. So we will go zone by zone. It's also important to go zone by zone, as you'll see in any kind of protocol that will be talked about later. We can't have all the customers doing this protocol all at the same time, or it could hinder our recovery efforts. Those zones are prioritized. They're done by pressure zone, so they will overlap zip codes. They will overlap, you know, county lines. They'll overlap city lines because they're based on our system pressure zones. So I'll talk in a minute about how we're going to have customers understand whether they're in the green or they're still in the red. We've prioritized by hospitals, density. I can tell you that the first zones that we have to deal with, the first four zones are 850 gradient. Within those four zones are 25,000 customers. To give you a characterization of their uses, they use 50 to 60% of our water. So a quarter of the customers in this zone use 50 to 60% of the water. Those zones are first zone that we're targeting, and this is all subject to sampling confirming that they're clear. The order of these can change depending on sampling results. Downtown Charleston, east end from the plant to the 35th Street Bridge is the first zone we're targeting. Second zone is Kanawha City. The third zone is South Charleston. If we get those three zones, we get the four major hospitals back into their providing their service. The fourth zone would be the west side, North Charleston. The timeline between zones, once we do a lift, we anticipate we need to watch and see the system react when people start flushing for about an hour before we could consider opening up another zone. We have to make sure we don't put the system at risk. So how do we plan to communicate lifting these zones with customers? We've done some extensive work, and we are going to make an interactive, internet-based mapping system available for our customers. It is not live yet. It is complete. We're prepared to demonstrate that for the media sometime tonight after the press conference. We have several computers set up. Anyone will be able to go to this website, and the map will be based on the premise of green or red. If you look at your property and it's in the red zone, you're under the do not use, and you should not start any protocol to flush and cleanse your system. If you're in the green, you've been cleared and you can start those procedures. So we're using a four-prong approach. That's the one that people can get to and self-serve themselves, get the information they need in the most timely fashion. We're also going to take our current information on the customers, the phone numbers that they've given us. We're going to run those through an auto dialer as we lift by zone, and we expect within an hour to an hour and a half that auto dialer will call everyone in that zone that we're lifting. It's all predicated on the quality of the phone numbers that we've been provided by our customers. The third part would be the we're going to create a local 24/7 hotline. The issue with mapping for customers is if you're in the center of the map of the zone, you'll clearly identify that you're in the clear. But it's hard to draw that border and have people know, am I on this side of the line or am I on that side of the line? So this tool, when you go in the tool, you can enter your address and it will tell you. Or you can keep zooming out and you can actually see your house. Click on your house and it will tell you. But the hotline will be available for customers to call our local staff and other resources. Now, I have to level set. This is not a very sophisticated phone system that we put in place. We have a number of phone lines. There's no messaging. If you call in and all lines are busy, you're going to get a busy signal. You'll have to call back. So we're asking people to try to do as much as they can on their own. But if you can't, call us. But I want to level set the expectations that there will be some delays anticipated getting to us. I think that's it. But one thing I also want to set on that is, please do not call this hotline. It will be only for the advisory, the lift, green or red. Don't call for billing concerns, water quality, how to do the procedure. These people are only going to be able to answer, you're in the clear or you're not. So, you know, that's all we're going to be able to deal with, Governor.
At this time, of course, we all are concerned about when our kids are going to get back to school, but this time I'll call on State Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Jim Ferris, and he'll be speaking regarding the effects, school closings, and so forth. Dr. Ferris.
Thank you, Governor. First of all, I'd like to thank all the students and the parents, teachers, staff, county superintendents in these affected areas for their patience and their willingness to work with us. Communications will go out shortly to all county superintendents with protocol information for steps to flush systems, to steps to take in order to clean all equipment and appliances that may have been in contact with any contaminated water. You're well aware that on Friday we had, on Thursday for most of the day, most of the schools in these areas were in session. Local county personnel will be utilized tomorrow for the purpose of conducting the cleaning of the lines and the systems in the schools, and as well as the cleaning of the equipment, services, and appliances that may have been touched by the water. Westford, the next big question always is of a state superintendent, so bear with me, and that is, West Virginia Code 18-5-45N provides that minimum instructional time may be decreased by order of the state superintendent in any county declared a federal disaster area, and where the event causing the declaration is substantially related to a reduction in instructional days. Obviously, we have that here. But we will continue to monitor this situation. It is our hope that Tuesday will be a day that most of our schools, students will be back in school, but we're gonna wait until the end of this crisis and the end of the other situation that we deal with school closings, and that is, we're not halfway through the winter season yet. So we're going to be working with the county superintendents. I will give you status reports on the following counties. The actual schools impacted by West Virginia American Water can be obtained from my press secretary, Liza Cordera, and she will work with you on that. Boone County schools, all schools are closed. Kanawha County schools, all schools are closed. In Clay County, H.E. White Elementary School is closed. In Lincoln County, all schools are closed at this time. Jackson County, all schools are open. Putnam County, all schools are closed. Cabell County, Culloden Elementary is closed. Roane County, all schools are open. Logan County, all schools are open. As you can see, we're working to get students back in school. That's our main mission, and we will continue to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Next, I'd like to call on Secretary Bowling. She'll be Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources, and she'll be speaking regarding the health aspects and the update in that area.
Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Governor. I think it's very important that everyone recognize when the green light is given, that the state and local health departments, along with West Virginia American Water, have finalized protocols. These protocols will include flushing and cleaning and will be provided to the public by multiple sources. You have helped us in the media, and we will continue to seek your assistance in helping us communicate out those protocols when the timing is right. We also are continuing our process for food service to allow restaurants and some establishments to open with approval from their local county health departments. In addition, we have looked at the possibility of having a similar process for daycare centers, again, with approval of the county health departments, and those that information would be available on the county health department website. We have coordinated efforts between the state and local health departments. There will be consistency in our messaging to the consumer, which we believe is very important. Our job is the health and well-being of the people here in the state of West Virginia. From a statistical perspective, a little bit of an update. Our total number of admissions from the beginning of this incident have been 10 admissions at 3 hospitals, none in serious or critical condition. We have treated and released 169 patients from our emergency rooms, and those are reported. From the Poison Control Center, we also have had 1,045 just human exposure calls, 65 animal-related calls, and 211 informational calls. But again, we have actually seen a decline in the number of individuals seeking information from the Poison Control Center. So from a health update, that's where we are at this point in time. Thank you, Governor.
Finally, I'd like to call on our director of our Homeland Security and Emergency Management Office. Obviously, we're still giving out water and supplies around the state, and Jimmy Jeanette will report on that. Jimmy.
Thank you, Governor. The State Emergency Operations Center continues to be open. It will remain open until this situation is completely terminated. Working with FEMA and our voluntary organizations, we continue to distribute water to the counties that are impacted, and the locations that you can pick up water are available on various websites and through you all. And we very much appreciate you all's assistance in getting that message out. We have sufficient supplies on hand, so there will not be a shortage of water. The private sector, as I said yesterday, is pretty well restocked with just about anything you want, and they're fully functional. So stores are open. We're starting to get back to normal, and I want to take just a second to thank all the volunteers and all that have helped us in this process to get the water out and distribute those supplies to our citizens. Thank you.
Also, as Mr. McIntyre had mentioned, as soon as the press conference is open, there will be a demonstration on the computer on exactly how you can tell when you get the green light or red light. And I would just remind everyone once again, it is still a state of emergency. Things are looking right, they're trending in the right direction. Please don't jump ahead. Don't go out and say, well, things are good, because that green light has not been given yet. And I think it's so important for people to wait until all tests have been done. The water company has given its go-ahead, as well as our state health department. So with that said, we'd be happy to take any questions that the media may have. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Dave Benner, NCA Fox 11. Are state agencies open tomorrow, and should state employees report to work?
Yes. All state offices will be open tomorrow.
Do we know how this leak has affected wildlife?
Randy?
Yes, there are no known impacts to the wildlife. Primarily in a spill like this, we'd be concerned about aquatic life. There are no reported fish kills, and based upon what we know about the chemical, no impacts on aquatic life at all.
Yes, ma'am.
Ray from Melinda with the Gazette. What is the possibility of chemical residue in home pipes, hot water tanks, and appliances?
I wish I could speak to that with some authority, but I cannot. This is a highly soluble compound, and we don't believe, and I said this yesterday, the The information that I have is, I don't believe, it's an opinion, but it's the best I can offer. That it will.
Are there going to be instructions with the flushing instructions sent out to deal with that, to address those possible issues?
The protocols that have been finalized that will be provided have very specific instructions, time frames for flushing, the type of cleansing that needs to be done. And it's the consensus of the group that has been working together on this that with this work and the type of flushing and cleansing that's being done, that it will be successful, and especially because it's a water-soluble chemical.
But does it include those specific aspects, the hot water tanks, not just pipes?
Yes, ma'am, it okay. does. All that will be addressed in the protocols.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Eric Moran, The Wall Street Journal. As this turns maybe towards a little bit more of an investigation stage, can you tell us who first reported the leak, at what time was it reported, and to which authority under which law? Thank you.
It's Randy Heffman, Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection.
The first reports of the leak came in as an odor complaint from some local citizens, and the DEP's air quality experts responded to that complaint. The complaint came in at 8:15. I'm sorry if I didn't say that. And we finally tracked down the odor to the location at about 11:15 on Thursday morning.
So the Freedom didn't call a hotline, or did they comply? Was there a law they needed to comply with, and did they comply?
Freedom called the spill hotline, which is a regulatory requirement regarding the spill, at 12:05 p.m. on Thursday.
But DEP was already on site by that point?
Yes, we were.
Okay.
The leak originated with Freedom, but we've only had one very short press conference with them, and that was clear back on Friday. Should they have been more involved in these press conferences with answering questions?
Well, I think they should have. Obviously, as we've found out, most people did not know a whole lot about this particular chemical, and it's one that that we've had to do a lot of research on internally very quickly to find out what effects it may have. And I think that perhaps they could have been a little bit more forthcoming to be able to offer their assistance on problems this particular chemical could have caused. I think it would have been very helpful.
How helpful have they been? I mean, truthfully.
Mike Dorsey is my DEP's guy that's on the ground there on a daily basis. They have been actively engaged in the site remediation. They have been responding very well to our instructions, and we're not having any difficulty with them in the remediation phase of this project.
Do we know when the last time that the tanks were inspected there for any chemical plant? How often are those tanks inspected?
These tanks were not inspected on a regular basis because they are it's a storage facility only. It's not a process facility. They simply brought the materials in and they stored them in the tanks, and then they shipped them out. So there are no processes, there are no water discharges, there are no air discharges. So there's not an environmental permit at this time that is required.
Is that something, Governor, that you will look at going forward?
Absolutely. I'll be working with Secretary Heffman at all aspects of this event, and see what the record, we'll come with recommendations on what should happen to prevent this kind of event from happening again.
Have any legislators reached out to you, or are you reached out to them?
Well, it's been a weekend, and we've been focusing our efforts on getting water back to the people, getting people's lives back to over. They'll be back in town tomorrow.
Governor, speaking of looking forward, looking back, in 2002, there was a risk assessment done specifically for the Elk River, which said that there was a high risk that there would be contamination specifically for this water supply, and the reports were for the Kanawha Valley water system, and they go back and say that there should have been their recommendation for that report in 2002, post 9/11, said that there was also looking to an alternative water supply. Jeff, I guess this would be part your answer. Is there are you looking forward now to an alternative water supply? Have you seen that study that was done in 02 after that?
I have not seen it personally. Just looking to some other department heads.
So, are we looking at options for alternative water supply?
We will be looking at all the options.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that to our attention.
So far on Freedom, on the Freedom Industries side, as far as remediation, the DEP has issued several orders regarding that and what still needs to be done.
Mike Dorsey, Chief of Homeland Security and Emergency Response at the Department of Environmental Protection. There has been quite a bit of work done up there, a lot of excavation in the areas of the tanks. That was done early on to catch the material before it could get off site. Today, the tank itself is being cleaned, and it will soon be cut apart, as will the other two tanks that have held this material. There have been trenches excavated on the riverbank to catch materials that comes off the hill, and that's being pumped back to the top of the hill. There are booms in the river to catch the material as it leaches from the riverbank into the river, and those are being aggressively maintained. So there is quite a bit of work ongoing, and there will be quite a bit of work off into the future after this emergency is over that will just take place in the fullness of time. That will involve removing tanks, removing concrete, replacing material that was on this site with new and better material.
Let's move over here. Just one.
Governor, obviously schools are closed. Government is coming in. Legislature is coming in. Do you expect that the private industry will also have workers in as normally as they can under the situation?
Actually, I think it'll be very much like Friday, with exception of those businesses that especially deal with food products and so forth that have to use water. It will be my expectation that most businesses will be open tomorrow. I don't know that, but because most of them were open on Friday.
Have you gotten any sense of the economic impact at this point?
Not at this point, no, sir.
Governor, how did no one know that a chemical was being stored less than a mile upstream from the water treatment facility?
I think that those were reported to you, Warren. I mean,
yes.
You are.
The facility filed its Tier 2 reporting with our agency as required, similar to the other 9,000 facilities that report to us. The chemical that is involved here is not listed as an extremely hazardous or toxic substance, so it's not subject to a lot of the regulatory requirements that other products are.
Could 7,500 gallons of the chemical leak from an inch-sized crack in the tank leak in just a few hours? I mean, how could it have been leaking in 3 hours if it's that large of amount?
Mike Dorsey, once again. We say it's an inch-sized hole. It's roughly an inch. I'm not crawled into the tank, but no one's done the calculation. If we actually measure the hole and the density of the material, we can probably tell you how long it's been leaking. No one's done that, how long it leaked for, but we have not done that yet.
So it could have been leaking for several days before it was first noticed?
With the low odor threshold, it had not been leaking for too much longer than before it was discovered, because as you can tell, everybody can smell it, and they can smell it downtown very quickly.
Can we go in the first zone, the soonest the first zone could possibly be open for water use?
Thank you. It's a good question. It's one that is based on the sampling results. So there is no way to predict what the results of the sampling will be, but we're going to do it in zones, but we have to look at multiple zones for safety before we can release one zone.
You feel like you're close to that point where at least the first zone will be open?
I have not seen a result in our distribution system that's above one today. From
the
same point.
Let's take a little turn here.
First, Jeff, is there a minimum number of days of systematic flushing you need to take before you can lift any of the zones?
No, and realize that when we're pushing out water that meets the standard for 24 hours, it's out. That's good water in the system. We don't want to go around flushing all of that water out. So as we sample, if we find areas where there's hot spots, and again, we're using our hydraulic modeling to help guide us through the system, we know the system and how it flows. If we find spots, we will flush. And we were out last night doing just that. But if we sample an area and we watch our hydraulic modeling after we've pushed 24 hours of water, if that water's where we expect it to be and it samples good, we're prepared with the health department to look at lifting that zone.
We've also seen reports of We've also heard reports of broken O-rings, seals, leaking toilets in some people's houses, particularly in Boone County. If residents are finding some sort of damage to their faucets, their O-rings, can they expect some sort of credit for that damage?
We're working on how to work. You know, we've been impacted. West Virginia American Water has been impacted by this spill significantly, and our customers are suffering the effects of that. We're here to work with our customers to make sure they get the best treatment we can, but I can't answer that question at this time.
I just wanted to follow up. You said there's no idea of the economic impact up until this point, no idea of what this is costing the state day by day?
I have not received it from our tax department yet. We'll try to have that tomorrow for you.
Yes. Governor, some people have used this incident as a way to kind of take a jab at the coal industry and the dangers of it. What would you say to that?
As I mentioned in a press conference a couple of days ago, this was not a coal company. This was a chemical supplier that where the leak occurred. You know, as far as I know, there was no coal mines within miles of this particular incident.
Governor, since not much is known about the chemical, who came up with a 1 parts per million
the
number?
The CDC, Center for Disease Control.
So they had adequate information on this chemical?
Karen, you want to do it?
They were contacted immediately, and there's a very specific calculation that they do because this chemical was not deemed as already hazardous. They had to go through a process to give us a recommendation, so we began working with them immediately. So the 1 parts per million comes directly from their center, so that we felt very confident in the federal system and their ability to provide us with the information that we needed.
You have it.
Sorry, Secretary Bowling, are we ready to connect a link, any of these people admitted to the hospital or the reported symptoms, to the chemical spill yet, or is that still not something you're prepared to do?
We do surveillance, and we would have to do abstract of chart reviews and really be able to look at that specifically, so no, we are not prepared to answer that question.
Do you personally think that it's connected?
I don't have a personal opinion because we're scientists. You know, we have to look at the specific details. And at this point in time, we don't have enough detail to make that determination.
Stu, one last one.
We've talked about the chemicals still in the soil at the plant going into the river. How much longer do we think that will be a problem, and what is still being done to stop it?
As Mr. Dorsey mentioned earlier, there's a lot of remediation taking place at the site with the cutoff trenches and so forth. I think the numbers that you were given earlier in the river at the intake to the water plant of being zero is a good indication that the material is being controlled at the site, so we have a lot of confidence that we don't have anything going into the water right now. There could always be a spike or some anomaly that might change that, but the material is being the site's being adequately remediated. Yeah.
Can you give residents a timeline? How long will it be before they can use their water?
When the green light comes
on. Well, when the green light comes on, but not we don't want to be flippant. We're working as hard as we can. Samples are out everywhere. We've collected the samples that we need. We're waiting for the results. It takes, you know, a bit of time, as we've talked about in multiple press conferences, but then the results. You know, if the results aren't there, we got to go do some activity. So
we're talking several more days, a week, less than a week?
I can tell you at this point, I don't believe we're several days from starting to lift, but I'm not saying today.
Governor, we're getting a lot of calls from our listeners wondering, those who are disabled, those who, seniors who can't get out, how can they get help if they need help? Who do they call?
If they need water, if they need supplies, if they'll contact their local emergency management office, then those offices can coordinate to help get deliveries. The Red Cross has made deliveries. Many of the volunteer agencies, VOAD, has taken steps to ensure some of these people are contacted, those that are known, and to take the necessary supplies to them.
Before all of this, how was this chemical disposed of after it was used to wash and clean the coal? Where did it go after that? How was it kept?
It's used in the coal preparation process, and it's used in the place of diesel fuel. Diesel-based substance was used for this process until they went to this particular chemical. It is. It's when it washes through the system, it's discharged through an NPDES permit, through an NPDES outlet.
And And what is that exactly?
That's a permit issued by the state that regulates the amount of this material that can be discharged into a stream. And it may require some treatment. That's permit specific, so there's not a general answer that I can give you there.
So a regulated number was let into the stream.
At this particular, this site did not have a permit to release anything into the stream. But this, there was no coal being washed at this site. This was simply a bulk storage facility.
Of the number of people who are actually following the do not use order by comparing typical usage and usage over the last 4 days, Mr. McIntyre?
Again, I would say that's another very good question, but as I mentioned before the very severe cold that we had, we were running the plant in the high 20 range, and then after that with the breaks and the usage that customers were doing at their taps, we're in the low 40 million gallon per day range. We've been varying the rates right now artificially to draft our tanks. That's a term that we use to say that we're gonna lower our tanks to lower level to make the water move through the system the way we want. So we've changed the profiling to a point that I can't really predict, whether people are or are not following the protocol.
Okay. Everyone will be here for a little while if you want to ask individual questions. Thank you all once again for coming.
You've been listening to live coverage of the news briefing with Governor Tomlin and his team regarding the water emergency. The numbers appear to be encouraging, but the governor asked that residents in these nine counties continue to be patient as service is safely restored. The testing can continue and move forward for further testing throughout the water system, and the do not use order will be lifted by zones, but it's not lifted yet. You can't have all customers flush out the system at the same time as it would compromise recovery, so customers will be told that they are either in a red or green zone. And those zones will be prioritized. All schools in Kanawha County will be closed tomorrow due to the water crisis. Cooks, custodians, maintenance, and central office staff are to report to work. The Bible Center School in Kanawha County is also closed tomorrow. Culloden Elementary School in Campbell County will be closed. Custodians and cooks are to report, but teachers don't need to. Boone County is closed. Lincoln County schools are closed. Jackson County schools are open. Putnam County schools are closed. Roan County and Logan County schools are both open tomorrow. The University of Charleston is shutting down its main campus until further notice because of a lack of clean water. Beginning tomorrow, all activities at the Charleston campus are canceled until further notice. University President Ed Welch said today that the school's campuses in Beckley and Martinsburg will begin classes as scheduled tomorrow as they are not affected by the chemical spill. And Kroger is sending 100 cases of hand sanitizer and 100 cases of sanitary wipes for hospitals in the nine-county area where this water ban is in effect. Kroger is responding to a request from the governor's office through the West Virginia Retailers Association. Hospitals have a special need for these items without access to clean water for staff and patients. We'll have more coverage of this issue tomorrow on West Virginia Morning at 7:30 and throughout the morning on Morning Edition. And more information is available on our website, wvpublic.org. I'm Beth Voorhees, reporting for West Virginia Public Radio.